I think as athletes, we all walk around like we're superheroes, and we have to because of what we do. It wasn't until I had my first major knee surgery and I was sitting back like, Sean, this knee is bad. You know, you shouldn't be. And I'm like, I just had two sacks. What are you talking about? I would not accept being hurt. I had relationships that were extended far beyond what I did on the football field.
In a way, you're competing with UFC.
Yeah.
And that's not a small organization.
Yeah, I mean, they're $12.4 billion organization.
They're not small.
All the athletes out there that are struggling finding that second act, and they're trying to transition to something else and don't know what they do, I said, the second they find that passion that they had when they took the field into something else, guys are dangerous.
Welcome to the show, man. How are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Doing good.
Glad about time, man. We've been talking about doing this for a while.
I know. And it's been, I would get to see you in Vegas, but it's nice having you back home.
I know.
And you're back home for a fight.
Back here, we got a big fight at Casino Palma tomorrow, actually. We'll be live on Fubo. And it's cool, man, because we got some former UFC guys, former PFL, former Bellator, and then the next up-and-coming guys we're building. So, my goal is when I came to San Diego, because obviously I'm going back into my stomping grounds back home, that we get as many local fighters as possible. Like 80% of the card, we got 10 fights tomorrow. 80% of the cards is all locals.
Which is great.
And, we got I did a partnership with Camp Pendleton. So we got 150 military Marines coming. We got this partnership with, different vets, a bunch of Navy SEAL guys coming. So For me, when we came back, I wanted to make sure that we had the community ties into it, that we had a reason to, because the fights are going to be the fights, right? The fights are going to be good, but for me, it was to get more local companies, restaurants, bars, lounges, military. We had to make sure we did a lot of local stuff when we came back here.
And Everbowl's a sponsor too.
Yes,
we are always going to be a sponsor of Lights Out.
No, you guys always come through, man. And the cool thing about that is that when people ask me whatever, so I'm obviously a big Everbowl fan.
Thank you.
I'm known, we go back for years, man. But to see you guys, what you've done over the last couple of years, man, has been pretty remarkable.
Thank you.
And being able to roll things out so fast. I can't believe how fast you guys roll stuff out, man. So that's pretty cool.
Well, thank you. So what was the reason? Obviously, everyone knows your NFL career. For those who don't. Have some fun. Go to YouTube and search Lights Out NFL and watch him demolish half the teams in the NFL. But what was the real reason you switched and pivoted to fighting, UFC style?
Yeah, so when I first started, when I got into the NFL, my first year, even I won Defensive Rookie of the Year and I went to Pro Bowl and I had some accolades and stuff, I wasn't really that good with my hands. And as an outside linebacker and pass rusher, the hands are most important. You're your hand combat and be able to do that. And so one day I was training in a gym. I grew up in Prince George's County, Maryland. And so I grew up, my uncles were professional boxers. We grew up just naturally boxing, right? So we'll have the cookouts. And if there's an argument between my cousins and uncles, my grandmother would be like, hey, go get the gloves. My grandmother would be like, hey, go get the gloves at the cookout.
Because did anyone ever beat you?
No, okay. No, absolutely not. I'm still undefeated in the neighborhood. But it was during in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, that time in the 80s and 90s, man, it was pretty rough, So where we came from, we had to have that with us a little bit, kind of a defense mechanism to protect yourself because of everything that was going on around. So anyway, I got drafted by the Chargers in 05, and Jay Glazer from Fox Sports, he saw me hitting the mitts one day. He said, dude, I didn't know you can box. I said, yeah, I've been boxing for years. He said, have you ever tried MMA? I said, no, I haven't. He said, well, I think it'll help you out in football. I said, oh, cool, I'll do it. And so he texts me an address. The next day, I show up at a gym. He texts me, and Jay Glazer's on my left, and Randy Couture is on my right. So at the time, I don't know. I'm thinking I'm being set up for a fight, right? And I'm like, I'm not fighting Randy Couture today. You crazy? But what it did was it allowed me to be able to use my hands and hand-eye coordination to be able to be active with my hands. And I saw how, Randy Couture was tossing me around. We were pummeling, right? and grappling, I got him by 50 or 60 pounds, and he was just throwing me around, and I could not feel, I was so humbled that day. And I felt, I walked out of the gym defeated, but I realized that MMA was a big help in football. I came out in 2006, led the NFL in sacks because I started to use my hands. And so when I talk to a lot of former guys now, I try to get them involved in combat sports. Whether they take – now, I want everybody to fight. You talk to them like, hey, I'm going to try to get guys to fight in a second. But I think that it's just going to help a lot of guys, especially from that transition from football when you're struggling to get that locker room feel and that regimen back.
Well, and I'm glad you said that because I've heard so many stories. I mean, LaDainian Tomlinson did ballet as a kid.
Yeah.
And you could see his footwork as an NFL running back, you know. Yeah. And as you mentioned, I mean, your athleticism was clearly above most when you came into the league. But those who watched your career like I did, you definitely improved your technique as you were going on. You no longer were just bull rushing people over. You're actually using more technique, coupled with that athleticism.
Yeah, and that's what it was, man. I relied heavily on the explosion off of football, off the line of scrimmage, and being able to use my strength and speed. I mean, I was 265 running, like a tight end or a running back, with the same speed. And so that got me to a certain point, but I knew in order to kind of get over that hump and start getting into that great category that I had to – fine-tune the game, and I started working out with all these guys during the offseason, Teter Ortiz, Chuck Liddell, Tyron Woodley, when he first came on in the mid-2000s. I was in a gym with all these guys during the offseason. And so it kind of just naturally, the transition into MMA was natural. And when I retired in 2013, I went into TV. I went straight to NFL Network. And I was doing stuff with Fox Sports and ESPN, so I understood how broadcast and production worked. So I got MMA. I've been around the business for a long time, and then I understood production, TV, and how TV works, which cameras did what, and how to get in and out of breaks. Before you know it, I was like, man, I can do this. And then that's when I ended up launching Lights Out Extreme Fighting, and currently we're right now top five most watched on Fubo Sports.
The idea for the business side, did you always know you wanted to get into that side? Because obviously fighting is one element.
Yeah.
Production's another.
Mm-hmm.
But you're competing with UFC.
Yeah.
And that's not a small organization.
Yeah. I mean, they're a $12.4 billion organization.
They're not small.
And I think I look at it as less competing for them. I look at it in the UFC, they need leagues like us. They do. And they're so big. And the ultimate goal, and I use the UFC, I make that comparison of the NFL. Like, they're the NFL of MMA.
Yep.
They are. They're the closest thing to it. From the story buildups, the storytelling, the branding, the just everything about the production quality, they're the closest thing to the NFL in the MMA space. So, I realize that that's what guys' ultimate goal is. If we can't keep them anymore, I'm like, hey, I'll drive you straight to the apex myself. so we want guys to be able to do that. But I think the difference is with us, we have the next up-and-coming superstars. The UFC, and the reason why they're so big and great is because they grew their talent, right? They wasn't trying to go out and get a guy and pay him a lot of money for one or two fights. Like, no, they wanted to bring their guys on. And prime example, Sean O'Malley, right, who fought on a contender, his curly-haired fro kid now with pink cornrows and got tattoos all over and a personality. Now he's the face right now of the UFC, by beating Aljamain Sterling. Mm-hmm. And so you want those situations where you can grow guys from, we got amateur fights coming up all the way to the pros. You turn pro with them and then they start growing with the brand.
The transition from the NFL to now business owner.
Yeah.
Is not an easy one. Was there anyone who was pivotal in that transition for you? Like, how did you figure out as an entrepreneur coming off the NFL? And we're going to talk about your personal brand in a minute because you were light years ahead of social media on that. And you're using it, which is great. Lights Out. It's in the name. But do you have mentors? What was your go-to strategy when you said, I want to start this fighting league? How am I going to do it?
I was fortunate because obviously, playing in the NFL, people know who I was and things like that. But I had relationships that was extending far beyond what I did on the football field. And so, I was able to pick up the phone and call Paul Allen Mitchell. I was able to call a Jeff Hoffman, who's the founder of Priceline. I can call Diddy. I can call Donald Trump. Donald Trump was pivotal, man. And I don't get too much in the politics side, but he took me under his wing in the mid-2000s, where he was
pre-politics,
and I consider him, still do consider him a close friend. He would literally, Donald Trump would have would invite me to the Trump Towers, and I would go there during the off season. I would stay in his office. Even when he was there, he'd be off shooting Apprentice, and he would let everybody know in the licensing department and the business department, hey, look, when Sean comes here, take care of him. So I was sitting in Donald Trump meetings, all of them. And
you were getting a firsthand education.
100% on licensing, on branding, because he was the best when it come to that. Nobody did better than Trump when it come to branding himself. So I did. I learned a lot from him. And, people associate the side of the politics side of him. But I'm like, you're forgetting that the word Trump, when you talk about somebody got a Trump card, came from Donald Trump. That's how much branding he did. And so I learned a lot of that from him. There's 15 guys, Stephen Jonah, who was pivotal for me learning licensing and apparel. That's how I got into the apparel business. When I retired, I got an office next to them, and they used to have a company called MMA Elite that was huge, right, in the MMA space and UFC for a long time. They were doing, 100 plus million a year in Walmart and all these places. So I'm learning how retail went. And yeah. So when I finally launched Lights Out brand in Tilly's and all these stores, I was in 300 stores in the country.
What year was that?
This was between 2014 and 2018. I was in 300 stores in the country selling Lights Out. So I understood retail and sell throughs and everything else. So that was from Stephen Jonas. So for me, I would say the ability to be able to pick up the phone and, people helping me out and spend their time, because that's all you can do is hope somebody give you their time. If somebody's willing to give you information, because that's all I want. I don't need you to do anything for me, nothing. But if I need to get in contact with you and I need to know how this goes, I need you to explain it and I'm good. I don't need your help. I don't need money. I don't need nothing. I just need to know how this works. So I was fortunate for that to happen.
So I had the fortunate opportunity to get to know you when you were basically a rookie in the NFL, because you moved up the street from my parents' house.
And, yeah.
You're... quasi-manager was one of my very good friends. And so we used to hang out as kids, young adults. And I got to watch you develop your personal brand real time, not realizing what I was watching. But now I can look back and recognize that you built out this Lights Out brand and the personal brand long before anyone knew what Facebook and Instagram was.
Yeah.
Now, you were light years ahead of where the world has gone. So you had the knowledge and the capability to do that. What inspired you to do that? Because no one else was really doing that at the time.
Yeah. I think so I got the nickname Lights Out when I was 16 years old, right? In high school, I knocked out four kids in one game. And then that's how the whole Lights Out nickname was born. At the end of my 2005 season, I started looking around who owned Lights Out. And I found it was this company called PJ Salvage in Irvine. It was a big pajama company. It was, $175 to $100 million company. And I reached out to him with my good friend who was an attorney, a trademark attorney, Greg Wiseman. And I said, Greg, I want to get to this company. I want to buy the name. And so they came back and said, yeah, sure, no problem, $700,000, right? And I said, I'm not, no. I'm like, no, that's not happening. So anyway, we went back and forth for a little bit. I ended up buying it, all the trademarks and classifications for Lights Out for about $150,000. We bought it. But then I knew what I wanted to do, but I didn't know how to do it.
Yep.
And I didn't know the apparel space. I didn't understand retail, even how much things cost, like how much you pay to get a T-shirt made. And so I was literally picking up the phone to anybody big in the apparel space and say, hey, how much are you paying for your shirts, your blank tees? And they would say, hey, I'm paying, paying $250, right, or whatever the number was. So, like I said, I really credit the people who picked up the phone and answered when I had questions.
Yeah, but that's how. But you had the knowledge to even know to do that.
Yeah.
Back, I look at the guys you played with. LaDainian didn't build a personal brand outside of just being an NFL player.
Yeah.
Right? You built this Lights Out brand, which you have pivoted with post-career into all these different avenues, all these different business opportunities from MMA fighting to apparel.
Insurance
and all the other things we're going to get into. But that started when you were a young guy playing
the NFL.
You were 21 playing football. And not to say you're not, this was before social media.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, so I was talking to somebody about that the other day, and social media wasn't as big. So, you know, like back in the day when the rappers, entertainers, and musicians, they were like selling CDs out the trunk, right? Because there was no social media. Now, you put something on SoundCloud, or you put something on YouTube, it can go viral, and you can be famous overnight.
And a CD is not even used.
Yeah, CD's not even used anymore. And so I kind of make those comparisons because that's how I was building. Like a lot of door knocking, right? A lot of asking questions, showing up to places. You know, be times I would get out of practice, and it was a sports shop called Sports Fevers. I don't know if it's
I do. Here remember in the mall.
Yeah, the mall. Yeah. And so I called up the owner of sport. I had no idea what I was doing. I just knew I wanted to do something, right? And I threw that idea out to him. And he was looking at the phone. He told me, he said, Sean Merriman? I said, yeah, I want to sell some clothes in your stores. He said, yeah, come up and see me. So I remember leaving practice and going to see him, and that was my first doors. I got 9 stores of sports apparel, Sports Fevers, between here and OC. I think they had stores. And we sold out. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what I did or what I'm doing, but it's working. So let me do more of it. So I think, you know, just as a entrepreneur in general, like you have to just figure it out and get somebody to kind of formulate and articulate your ideas, because I didn't know what I was doing. So I started to place all these people around me who was a lot smarter in those things than I was. And just ask questions like, hey, you know, how do I sell in these stores? What do I get my clothes made at? What factories, manufacturers do I go to? What are delivery times? What is that? You know, it was more these asking questions and then get a hold of the best people in those positions to help me do what I wanted to do.
As an entrepreneur, I know how meaningful it is to invest in the people and causes that are close to me. And on GoFundMe, it's easy, safe, and powerful to do just that. Whether you're supporting a family member, friend, local business, or charity. And whenever you make a donation, you're protected by the GoFundMe Giving Guarantee. Visit GoFundMe.com today to help make a positive difference in your community. Did you always know you wanted to be an entrepreneur? Because I got to imagine you're a Defensive Player of the Year, Rookie of the Year, you're sacking my Raiders every 9 times a game, driving me crazy, doing your lights out dance, being featured on ESPN. I mean, selling T-shirts,
yeah,
that's an afterthought for most people in that position. So did you know football's great, but I always want to be an entrepreneur?
So in college, we had these things called the Pell Grants and stuff, right, where you got the funding or whatever mm-hmm. it is through the school. And I took the money and I don't know if you remember the old G-Unit tank top when they first came out. G-Unit had these tank tops long time ago that 50 Cent wore long time ago, right? And so I went to go buy like 100 of those blanks, tank tops. And I found a manufacturer in Maryland, in the Washington, D.C. And I was like, hey, just put the lights out, the switch on there. But they put like a bedazzled light switch on these tank tops. I mean, it was tacky as hell. It was terrible. But I was wearing it in the locker room, and I remember like I used to give them to some of my teammates, and then they all of a sudden they was laughing at first because they were bedazzled, and I got better with the design, and they started buying them. So you know, I always had the mentality to do it, but also too when you're the first one to do something, always like you're criticized for it, right? When you're the first to market, you're the first one to do something that you're kind of criticized for, because also at the time, you know, there's a lot of talk like, oh, I didn't care about football, right? Because I was on TV. At the time, I shot Entourage. I shot Entourage and the Mindy Project and some of these other big shows. And so it was like put out there that I didn't care about football. But mind you, I'm the first one in the gym, last one to leave, off the field. Like that was my mentality always. So yeah, I just always had the ideas and a work ethic to be an entrepreneur, but I didn't know what I was doing. But I knew that I was going to figure it out.
So what led you to insurance? Because now you're really growing this new insurance division company. You've been doing that for a couple of years now, and
right.
I mean, I'll let you tell us all the casinos and big projects you're working with. I mean, doing big things in the insurance space, which MMA and football, athletics,
right?
Insurance, not athletics.
Yeah. So during when the pandemic hit, there was my MMA league lights out. We're based in California, so we shut down, and I also was at Fox Sports as an analyst. And everything shut down in like 3 days. So this was the first time in my life that I wasn't doing anything. So the first month went by, and I was like, okay, I can do this. But the second month, I'm like, I was losing it. One of my really close friends, Brad Alkaisen, had said, hey, I'm with this company called Family First Life. You should look at him. He's making some really good money at the time. I said, nah, dude, I'm not into it. I kind of laughed, right? And I even made a joke. I said, what do you want me to put on a red shirt and khakis and knock on doors, right? Because that's what I thought about insurance, like the State Farm agent. So, but what I saw was there was a lot of people in need. Insurance, because of the pandemic, became a necessity. It wasn't a luxury anymore. So I was like, hold on, you can make money in this thing and you're helping people. I said, I like that. Mm-hmm. And so I started to get more and more insurance and realized that people needed it. It was GoFundMe pages popping up everywhere, right? And so I said, man, this insurance is cheap if you really do it and get final expense or mortgage protection or some kind of term or whatever. It's really cheap and people don't even look at it. Back where we were from in D.C., we didn't talk about insurance in our communities. You know, where I grew up, insurance was like an afterthought. If even thinking about it, like, I'm not paying $50 a month, or I'm not paying $75, $100, like, I'm not doing it. But we didn't think that way growing up. So the more and more I looked at this overall picture of people's necessities, they needed insurance. So currently with Family First Lights, man, I have 249 agents.
Underneath you.
In a Lights Out agency.
Yep.
And we're one of the
By the way, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's a lot of agents.
Yeah,
I think last time we were at dinner a couple of years ago, you were telling me, when you first told me about it, it was like 50.
Yeah, it was like 50 agents.
Yeah.
And so, you know, everybody's working from home and, you know, people are making a lot of money, but also too, man, like you're helping somebody, you're taking care of families. And I think that in all the money that's coming in, all the success we're having, I think that sometimes you forget that you're helping a family out. Something's going to happen one day, or something could happen one day to that husband, that wife, or the kids, or whatever, and they don't have to sell their home, right? They don't have to pay $30,000 for a funeral. Yep. And leave their family with debt. And so I kind of, in all the midst of the money and all the stuff that's cool, which is money, I love money, don't get me wrong, but you're helping a lot of people, and that's why I started to grow the business the way I did.
So what's the differentiator between the Lights Out, Family First Life, but the Lights Out.
Yeah.
What's your differentiator from all the other potential insurance companies? Like, why are people flocking to you? Why are you growing so fast?
Well, we're growing fast because we're helping guys train. We have this training system to help agents get going. I built out my own lead generation service within. And so we're finding all these people that's reaching out to us now for insurance as opposed to us calling them, mm-hmm. right? So now the agents are directly talking to people who are looking for insurance.
Warm leads.
They're picking up the phones. We got a Margaret Johnson here, and whatever her address is, age, health, medications, any surgeries. We have this information here because they're sending in their information to us.
Yep.
And so when you're providing leads and helping agents out with leads, and we have high compensation, I mean, agents are starting out 80, 90% compensation, which is unheard of, and no one else is doing that. And so me personally, as an agency owner, I'd rather have a little bit of a whole lot than a whole lot of a little bit.
Right.
Right. So we take care of our agents extremely well and building a team and making sure they're sustainable with training and leads. That's why we're growing, you know, so fast.
So for our audience, you know, we have a lot of aspiring entrepreneurs, adults looking and young adults looking for the next thing. How can they make their mark? What would be the reason that they should finish the episode and then call Lights Out Agency to join and become part of that?
Well, I mean, my question is always to agents, like, are you ready for your life to change, right? Are you ready to take that next step in life? And that's what we're doing. Matter of fact, when I was driving in here down to here in San Diego, we had an agent who was at Verizon. He was working at Verizon. And he was working with us part time. I convinced him to come over, and this guy, he was struggling and trying to get his life back on track, had some debt, had some things, whatever. Well, he just called and told me that he just left looking at a plot of land to build a house, right? He's been there for about a year.
That's fantastic.
And he's looking to build a home. So, like, for me, that is really cool. You know, somebody that was trying to find their way, trying to find their next step in life. You know, just we all battling, trying to figure out like what's the next thing and going through it. And to see somebody who was in a, you know, I wouldn't call it a bad place, but just in a confused place and trying to figure life out, to now, you know, calling me and saying, "Hey, I'm just leaving a lot. You know, is it going to build a home?" That to me is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. And what kind of training? So if I want to be a part of the team,
yeah,
I pay a fee. I take a license test.
We don't. So
how does it work?
We pay for your license. We help you out with leads starting out, and we have these. We created these online training Zooms that we do every day from 8 in the morning to like 6 at night. So an agent can get on a Zoom and have one-on-one training, help you through a call to close a deal.
I mean, so you're really joining a family.
Oh, that's it. That's what we exactly
Hence
what
the
we
name,
are.
Family
First Life, yeah. Yeah.
The name's right then.
100%. And, you know, with us, we try to create a family environment because most of these agents are dialing at home by themselves, and it gets lonely. I mean, you're dialing all day on the phone. You don't go into office. Like, you can kind of hit a wall because you're by yourself. So we created this family environment where you have 15 to 20 agents that's dialing. You know, so as soon as 5 or 6 agents or 10 agents get off, another 10 pop on. So you have, you know, 10, 12 hours a day of just agents dialing. So when new agents come on board, you're getting helped, right? Like, hey, I'm lost. I don't know what to do. No problem. You click on, go in a private room, and you're getting one-on-one coaching right
and
there.
And you get that relationship.
Yeah.
When you started this agency, I mean, what was the vision?
I did, man. You know what I wanted to do? I wish I knew about this industry and this thing back when I was playing, because I was paying a whole lot of rent, you know? I was taking care of a whole lot of mortgages and family and friends. I was taking care of a lot of people. And with this, the upside is a lot higher, and there's very few costs to start out, very few. So what I did was I got my family, friends. I said, "You guys, I'm done paying bills. You know, I'm done, you know, kind of giving, and I want to help you guys grow a business."
Teaching them.
I want to teach them to grow a business. And what's that, you know, that analogy people use? You show somebody how to fish type of deal, right?
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. All my friends, family that's in the agency right now, you know, they're all making 6 figures. And so that's what we create, as many 6 figures as possible, and try to take care of as many families as we can.
I mean, it's inspiring, right? Because a lot of people hear the name Sean Merriman, they think football.
Yeah.
What they don't realize is you've been an entrepreneur the entire time.
Yeah.
From apparel and the CEO of Lights Out Apparel to now MMA, insurance,
yeah,
broadcasting, football.
Yeah.
And there's probably a few more things in your...
Yeah. You have to have a love and a passion to do certain things, right? Like, you got your things, you're going to make money, but the things that's making money, you're putting money into, you're not working, you're getting kind of residual, some kind of, passive income. You're sitting back, you're collecting a check. You got a few of those things. For me, with MMA and insurance, I have a passion to do it. So working like that and putting that time and effort in, like, I take, you know, 50 calls a day between the two, literally, you know? And working directly, you can attest to this, I'm working directly with sponsors and partners and people we're working on, you know, dealing directly with me. And so you have to have a passion to do this, because at some point in time, the money just won't be enough.
Right.
It just won't. So you have to want to roll out of bed in the morning and say, "This is what I want to do today," and want to do it. And if it's not that, it's going to be hard, because when you start hitting that wall and things not going right, you're going to put your hands up and say, that's it. I'm done. I got enough money. I don't want to do anything else." And you could just walk away. So if you have something that you enjoy building, right? And there's very few things that's going to give you that same satisfaction of running out to 70,000 people. And that's why I got struggle. It is hard to replace that feeling of running out to 70,000 people, millions of people watching you on TV. You get a big play, a catch, sack, hit, whatever it is, and you get home, everybody's texting you, and, "Oh, man, I was watching you." You can't replace that. And so for me, it's been, lights out with the MMA and then the insurance.
Yeah. And if you had to go back to young Sean, you obviously didn't see how it was all going to play out, but dude, were you aware how short an NFL career is? Were you like conscious of that as you were building the Lights Out brand and doing the apparel? Like, was that in the back of your mind or anywhere in your mind saying, "Hey, you know what? I'm going to do these things," because this is the thing with a lot of my friends who are athletes. you don't usually end when you want to end.
No.
It's over no, when
they,
it's
they
over.
Tell you.
They tell you. Yeah.
Right.
Or it's an injury.
Yeah.
And not a lot of athletes plan for the after career.
Yeah.
While they're in it. Then they try afterwards. But you were doing it all along, and I'm still curious. Like, were you kind of cognizant of that? Because
you brought up a point about the injury. So I was 21 years old when I got the lights out and I acquired all the name and trademarks and all that. So I had the mindset of doing it, but it wasn't until my first injury, real injury, that I was like, okay, yeah, we need to do
the knee.
The knee. And that was my first time missing a significant amount of time ever. You know, I've had little stuff, miss a game, maybe, but it was nothing I've ever had, a big one.
Yeah.
And I think as athletes, we all walk around like we're superheroes. And we have to because of what we do, right? You have to have this mentality like, I can't get tired. I'm not going to get hurt. Nobody can stop me. I'm going to impose my will on someone else. So you have to have that mentality as an athlete. I mean, people can say, oh, it's cocky, and it's all they do. That guy across me is trying to kick your ass, you know? He's trying to hurt you, right? Yeah. And so you have to have this mentality like, that guy's not going to stop me. And matter of fact, I'm going to kick his ass for four quarters. You have to have that. And so when you have that mentality and that aura about you, you don't ever think you can get hurt. And so I don't know if you remember exactly what happened. So even after I got hurt, I was playing on a bum knee for five or six games. Even that year I went to the Pro Bowl, I couldn't get in my head that I was really hurt. I couldn't. I went down to see Dr. Andrews. I seen all these doctors in the country. They're like, Sean, this knee is bad. You know, you shouldn't be. And I'm like, I just had two sacks. What are you talking about? I would not accept being hurt. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until I had my first major knee surgery and I was sitting back like, this can be over. Like, this actually can be over. Now, I was under contract for 5 years, and I think I was in my fourth year when I had the surgery. So I had another year no matter what, and I was fine. And I knew they would either franchise me or do something to keep me for another year anyway. So I knew I had time. But I could not grasp the fact that I was injured. And that's when the mentality of this second act better be the best act, because that could be it.
And the second act is much longer.
Yes.
How many of the attributes that made you as good on the field do you apply to entrepreneurship?
So much. So much, man. And I'll kind of give you a funny story. So when I used to go to these meetings, board meetings, or whatever I did, a business meeting, and somebody would make the analogy of a football play, right? And it used to piss me off. Like, because I'm like, oh, I understand what you're saying. You can talk to me in these business terms and I can get it. And they would say, you know, that's like scoring a touchdown, or that's like, you know, they were trying to make these comparisons. And it used to piss me off. And then I started to notice, especially when I retired, and I'm talking to people about business, and I start making my own football comparisons. And what I noticed is football was so close to life and business that there's so many comparisons, right? You get injured, obstacles, adversity, you got to overcome them. Business, you fail, obstacles, adversity, you got to overcome them. Competition, you know, that you're sitting across from you, the preparation of watching film. What do you got to do in business? You got to prepare and know what you're doing, right? And do your market research, mm-hmm. and get all this information. It's the same thing as me going in and watching that left tackle for the Patriots. How many steps does this guy kick back before he tries to block me or put his hand? So you're watching all this stuff, and the same thing in business. So I started to actually make these analogies that used to piss me off myself. I was like, hey, you know, that's like, you know, in the third quarter and you're tired and you got to turn. Like, I started making these analogies and I caught myself like, damn, this is really close. So it helped me a lot. And all the athletes out there that's struggling finding that second act and they're trying to transition to something else and don't know what they do, I said, the second they find that passion that they had when they took the field into something else, guys are dangerous.
Hey, fitness fans, ready to crush your fitness goals? Make your move to EOS Fitness, where becoming a member starts at just $9.99 a month. Gyms are open 24/7 and packed with the latest gym equipment to keep your workouts fresh. What are you waiting for? Give them a call, drop by, or hit up jefffenster.com/EOS to join. EOS Fitness, better gym, better price. Now, let's get after those goals.
They're going to be very successful because athletes, especially in NFL, we're the most disciplined people walking on the planet Earth, right? Since you're 10, 11 years old, you're told to what time you got to show up to a meeting, what time a film session, in college, mandatory study hall hours, right? Regular students didn't have to worry about, like, we had mandatory stuff. We had to be there. And if you were on time, it was late. You had to be there 5 minutes early. And what happens when you get in the NFL? Well, you late to a meeting, what's going to happen? You get fined for being late to a meeting. And so when you have that regimen and that discipline, you take that same thing. I wake up at 5 in the morning. I'm in the gym at 5:30, you know, 6 days a week. I still get physical therapy done. I still spar and I still have that same regimen. Like, I'm playing on Sunday. Same. And so that my mentality is just that. I took everything that I've ever learned in sports and I've applied it to what I'm doing now.
I mean, it is. It's such a nice correlation. And I didn't play professional sports, but I played sports in high school and it's the same.
Yeah.
I mean, you take those same disciplines, that same principle, whatever you're doing.
Yep.
So I do agree with the correlation for sure. So now, transitioning one more time, there's a future Merriman. It's not a linebacker.
Yeah.
I see him. I see you. You show me some videos. You also told me about the infamous race. But is he still playing quarterback?
Yeah. Yeah, he plays.
Talking about his son.
Talking about his son, Justin Merriman. Yeah. He, you know, it's, DNA is crazy. It really is, man. You see some of the guys. I was just talking about this. Marvin Harrison's son to play at Ohio State, right? Plays wide receiver. Mm-hmm. And you just know that DNA is crazy because even though he plays quarterback, it's just he's such a freak athlete, right? I mean, he has a cannon, but he loves Tom Brady, and it makes me sick. I mean, he loves Tom Brady so much. He I think for his ninth birthday, he was playing hockey, and he had a tournament in Boston, and so he's like, "Dad, let's go. I want a Tom Brady jersey for my birthday." And I was like, "Who's gonna get it for you? Not me. I'm not wasting my money on that junk, you know." And so he convinced me to go in a store, a Patriots team store, and I mean, I was nauseous. I really
you
was.
You actually bought a Tom Brady
jersey? I bought him a Tom Brady jersey.
If you did that today, you'd be all over social media.
Yeah, it's sickening.
Yeah.
It really is. Kids will get you to do some of the weirdest stuff to make them happy. And I'm not over that one still.
Mm-hmm. I can feel it.
I feel like I failed as a father a little bit.
Which would you wear first? Tom Brady jersey or Raider jersey?
Ooh.
Oh, I'm going to get you in a Raider jersey. It's my mission.
Listen, I'm going to take a shower and bleach. You know, like I put a Raiders jersey on, dude. I got to jump in a tub of bleach. That's a tough one, man. I'll put on a Tom jersey first. I can't do Raiders. I just can't do it.
Huh?
Mm-mm. Can't do it.
So you think your son's gonna stay a quarterback?
I think so. But when they're young,
how old is he now? 13?
He's 13.
Yeah.
And he's coming to that age now where he's getting eyeballs in the country. Talent-wise, and my first ESPN article when I was rated as a player in the country was my sophomore year in high school. He's starting to get some of this notoriety now.
Is he an eighth grade or a freshman?
He's eighth.
Eighth grade.
He's an eighth, yeah.
Do you push him for linebacker or do you promote quarterback?
He doesn't have that mentality that
Killer.
I did. Yeah, he doesn't have – like at that age, I just wanted to fight. And hit people, and I didn't care about the football. You know, I played tight end, and I played running back a little bit, wide receiver. I didn't really care. I wanted to play defense. And even times I could have had an interception or go for it. I didn't want anything. I just wanted to hit somebody. And he doesn't have that mentality. I'm guessing maybe it might come, but he's such a talented quarterback, man. He's going to be, if he keeps up working like he is, that's the key. If he keeps working like he is, he'll be great.
Did you ever race him again?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not. I beat him that one time. And so
you beat him?
Yeah.
But you pulled the hamstring.
I did, but I pulled my hamstring beating him.
Oh.
I was not. So my son, it was his 10th birthday and or 10th, 11th birthday. And I've rented this place, like this big multi-purpose soccer field, football field for him and all of his friends. And, he started talking trash to me. Kind of showing off in front of his friends. I said, "Listen, don't get embarrassed. I'm faster than you, all right? Don't get embarrassed in front of your friends." "Yeah, Dad." "Yeah, no, no, no." And going back and forth. He said, let's race. I said, I'm not going to embarrass you in front of your friends, dude. Like, just go over to have fun with your friends. I'm going to sit over here and be on my phone. No, let's race. Are you scared? I said, okay. Right. Now you're going a little bit too far, buddy. He said, come on, let's go. So 20 yards. He had on cleats. I didn't. And we lined up. And I got on sweatpants, right? I'm not thinking nothing of it. I took off first 5 yards, and I just lightly go. I didn't know. And I looked next to me. He's right there. And I said, oh, whoa. Right? And then the next five, now I tuck my chin. I put my head down. I'm digging. 2-3 yards out, I feel my hamstring pop, pop, pop. I mean, I tore my hamstring up. I thought I ripped everything, right? But I won. And so I was flying. I was leaving town the next day because I had a meeting in L.A. So I get on a plane. My hamstring is black and blue. I had the flight attendant to bring me a bag. I'm sitting on the plane on one side, you know, kind of like I can't even sit. My hamstring is ripped off the bone. But I beat him. And so that was it.
Barely.
But you know what? That's enough. And I'm not racing them again. So that's that's about it.
Yeah, you always have it.
Oh, I would never race them again.
So my last question for you. If you had not gotten to play in the NFL, injury or life circumstance,
yeah,
did you ever have a backup plan, or was it burn the boats, you're playing in the NFL?
I was a criminal justice major. And so, you know, I plan on going into some kind of law enforcement, you know, CIA, FBI, something like that.
You'd be an intimidating FBI.
That was the whole point, you know. Yeah. Like,
yes, sir. Whatever you want.
So that was it. I minored in kinesiology. Too, because I've always really, really been in tune with learning about my body. I've always been that way. But I would have been in law enforcement somehow.
Well, man, this is always fun. Always fun hanging. I usually only get to see you for dinner in Vegas.
But, I know.
But
I know.
We've been
talking about doing this for a while, man. And then seriously, like you built this thing. I was watching you and Drew, and you know, other guests, and you know, the conversations that I think that even, you know, people are going to listen to this, that is something, some part of a conversation that somebody else is going to take from. Like every time you do something, you want to put enough information out that's going to do something to help somebody else. And I was watching you and Drew and some of the other conversations that you guys have, man. And I take little bits and pieces of everything that everybody say, man. So, you know, congrats on just everything.
Well, thank you, man. And congrats to you. I mean, obviously, first time you asked me, or I learned about UFC, Lights Out,
yeah,
fighting. I had only watched UFC before. I wanted to support you, so I was going to support you because of you. But the product was so good
that that's
why Everbowl continues to be a sponsor. It's not because of our friendship. It's because it's a great product, and it's awesome to see you build this business. It's awesome to see you build your insurance business as a serial entrepreneur. I understand and respect what it goes into what you do.
Yeah.
And you don't just trade on your name. You're in the trenches. You are in those meetings. You are having those conversations. And I think for the audience watching this, no matter how much success you achieve in life, in business, in sports, or whatever it is that you do, the constant dedication to continue to bring your best. And like you said, that second chapter has to be the best chapter.
Right.
You're not sitting here saying, you know, back in the day when I played in the NFL, you don't talk about it that much.
No, I don't.
Insurance. It's about the fighting league. It's about the apparel company. It's about the partnerships.
You know, that's what you want to do. Like I was fortunate. The NFL is the biggest platform you can play on, and it's nothing like playing in the NFL. You can't replace that feeling. But my goal is always to be great in something else to the point where they almost forget about what you were actually great in a long time ago, right? And then they'll remember you for what you do now. Because every 10 years, you got the new kids, millennials come up. They don't know. Like, you just go and they'd be like, oh, I watch some YouTube videos, you playing football, but they would know me from insurance and MMA.
Yep. So if you're watching this and you are interested in insurance or you never even thought about it, I highly recommend you reach out to Sean and his team because he's creating wealth for people all over the country. He's building something. He's helping people and helping them make money. Definitely tune in to Lights Out on Fubo if you're not local, or if you're in San Diego, come to the fight. He's got fights all over. He's working on fights around the country.
Yeah.
I mean, what number of fight are we on?
We're on 10.
This is the 10th.
Yeah. Then we're October 7th in Long Beach. So
October 7th in Long Beach. The fights are really good. I've been to three now.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I mean, the experience is incredible. The people who come is incredible. The environment and the product you're doing, you can see the level of dedication, man. So thank you. Thank you for being you.
Appreciate it.
You're a great individual, both professionally and as a friend. And, man, thanks for coming out.
No, man, thanks for having me. Seriously.
Hey, everyone. First, I want to thank all of you for tuning in. And if you guys haven't heard about my new book, Relationship Bank Account, click the link in the show notes or search the title on Amazon. This book is packed with all my secrets to success in both relationships and life. Make sure to pick up a copy, and if the book helps you on your journey, let us know by leaving a review. I appreciate all of you and can't wait to see you on the next one.